Thank you for tuning in to the Movie Geeks United 2013 Slam Dance Spotlight. Tonight, we speak with Peter Baxter and Dan Mervish. Both are co-founders of the Slam Dance Film Festival, and Mr. Baxter is also the president. First up, we hear from Mr. Baxter, who's joined by Daniel Harris, a co-producer of The Slam Collective, a sort of improvised film produced by Slam Dance filmmakers from around the globe. I wanted to ask you, first of all, about your history with the festival.
Okay. I made a film back in 95, which was at the 1997 Slam Dance Film Festival called The Bible and Gun Club. That won a grand jury prize. And so it started kind of a long, very pleasant relationship with Peter Baxter and Dan Mervish at the Slam Dance Film Festival. And I've just I've worked with them as programmers over the years. I've produced short films for Slam Dance Film Festival, and they just remained really good friends. So we started this this initiative called Slam Collective just last year, me and Peter. I'm living back in South Africa, although I'm talking from Los Angeles at the moment. And we had come up with the idea with another colleague of Peter's to do a series of shorts, and then it evolved into this documentary series, which was based loosely on this surrealist parlor game, Exquisite Corpse, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but it's a game of chance that the Dadaists and the surrealists used to play. And it's taking one image or sound or word, and each artist would then take a glance at it and then begin their own narrative, shall we say, from it. And so we evolved this into kind of a documentary series where we started with one particular image, which was started by a South African photographer by the name of Dale Udelman. And we handed that off to the first filmmaker, an Australian documentarian, and so it went. So to get back to your initial question, yeah, it's just been a very nice relationship over the last 15 years working with Peter and Slam Dance, and I'm getting up this year as a juror as well. So
yeah,
as you can see.
So what in your mind makes Slam Dance such a unique experience for an opportunity for independent filmmakers?
I think it's for the most part it's a community that once I felt this over the years is once you've got a film into Slam Dance, whatever it is, whether you win an award or it's a short film, you remain friends with so many filmmakers and the film festival for me, it's been two decades now. And you find filmmakers within that community to collaborate with. So whether it's been collaborating with Slam Dance and other filmmakers, professionally, I've been able to utilize those contacts to co-write other films, co-produce other films with filmmakers from that kind of Slam Dance family, as people say. And so people just kind of connect. You kind of lose contact maybe for a few months, maybe for a few years, and then for me, I've been out of town, out of Los Angeles now for the last 7 years, and I'm back here for a few months. So it's been very nice to reconnect. What we try to do with this particular series is try to reconnect some of the old filmmakers that we hadn't heard from over the last few years. So Monteith McCullum, he was an award, he won the grand jury prize for a film back in, I think it was 99, when Peter comes on, he'll correct me. And so he made one of the shorts. The Indian underground filmmaker Q had his film Gundu in competition or a special screening 3 years ago. So it's just a way of kind of reestablishing contacts, friendships, And kind of getting people to work on something that maybe they wouldn't have thought of if it wasn't kind of brought to them.
Yeah. Well, this special project that you've been talking about, kind of an experimental documentary, it's part of the Slam Dance Collective, and I think the finished film is called I Want to Be an American. Is that what it is?
Yes. Yeah. So I Want to Be an American is the first one-minute short that the South African photographer Dale Udelman made. And it was just made on a street with one particular street kid. And the film is titled I Want to Be an American. And we decided to call the documentary feature, which has yet actually to be assembled, that will be screened in its entirety, that particular one-minute short and then the six, say, 12-minute documentaries together consecutively on the 21st of January at Slam Dance, 6 p.m. So it's a collective, but it's also a feature. It's six separate short documentaries, but they also work together as kind of one idea and one concept. And when Peter comes on, we can discuss that a little bit more in depth.
I'm still waiting for his call to come through. But the project is fascinating because, as you alluded to before,
right?
I mean, these filmmakers are truly international. I mean, they're from all over the world that have participated in this particular project.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we have to go through the lineup is the first one is Dale Udelman, the photographer. The second one went to an Australian woman documentary filmmaker. Her name is Maya Newell. The second one handed off to, let me just see the list. I have it here, Maya Newell. Then Dylan Varecchia is mostly a cinematographer, although he's also a director and screenwriter, and he has a lot of connections out of Tijuana. So he made his film in Tijuana. So it's you can almost say a Mexican film,
mm-hmm.
although he lives in New York. Then Monteith McCullum lives upstate New York, and he's a teacher and a filmmaker. Then the next film was made by Q, and he lives in Calcutta.
Wow.
Then Peter Baxter made one out of Los Angeles, and then I finished the series with a short film called Rusa, which is a documentary about an old Cape Malay song, which is traditionally sung at weddings, we were kind of. It was kind of a lottery. We had to kind of almost pick. It was decided on by chance who would get, where you would arrive in the road to get your film. So it took a year for the films to kind of come down through this to get completed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but each filmmaker, I mean, they could take it. They could take it wherever they wanted it to go.
Right. So we set certain guidelines. Some of them were technical. Others were, I didn't want to give them too much theory behind it, but I wanted to give them technical guidelines which would, in almost like the Danish dogma style, which would limit them to kind of a specific style of filmmaking. Most important was that they made the films by themselves, that they would shoot the films by themselves and direct them. There wouldn't be a crew, so to speak. There wouldn't be, mm-hmm. wouldn't even be two people, but they could if they wanted to. But what I sensed is that most people went out and simply with the kind of the new technology that is out there today, where you can just shoot and do sound by oneself. It enabled them to get a lot more intimate with the subjects that they were documenting, and the film we didn't want them to be traditional documentaries, certainly not voiceovers, anything which would be seen as you can't really define traditional documentary, but we wanted more of a mood piece. Which they could kind of take in their own place and play with sound and images and the characters that there were. Some people chose simply to do a portrait of a particular character. Mine one was a... because it was about a song, it was about the particular characters who keep this traditional song alive in Cape Town, where I live. It was interesting seeing what people came up with over the months and how they took each suggestion, because what we did was each filmmaker passed on just a 30-second, instead of sending on their entire piece to the next filmmaker down the chain, each filmmaker sent 30-second piece just to give a suggestion of what they were doing or working with.
Hmm.
We didn't want people to let in on the next filmmaker the entire story. And so just to give them a suggestion of a mood, they would come up with an idea based on that.
Yeah. That sounds fascinating. And somehow they all, and Peter's on the line. I'm about to pick up his line. But,
okay.
But you're saying somehow they all kind of melded together and made some form of sense, as experimental as it feels, put all together.
Yeah, it was interesting getting the films in over the months and watching them, knowing that I had seen Dale Eagleman's first short, but nobody else had, and a sense of, theme started running through. Once we screen it in 10 days' time, it's going to be interesting to see the audience reaction, because it hasn't been cut together yet. I'm going to be doing that this weekend, just to finalize the cut. And then but I have a sense that there is some kind of theme of identity or loss of identity that all the filmmakers are encountering with their subjects, and a sense of community that each character either belongs in or feels that he doesn't belong to that particular community. That's a kind of almost a universal connection that I kind of came across from these different filmmakers from around the world.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah, that they were all in search for some kind of identity that they'd felt they'd lost.
Peter, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Peter, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We appreciate
Daniel's
it, too.
Daniel's right here, as you've been hearing.
Yeah.
I guess real quick I wanted to ask you, Peter, because we're on the topic of the Slam Dance Collective film. Is this something that you guys have been doing more of, kind of instigating production of your own projects through Slam Dance?
Yeah, we have been, and we've got involved with one or two features over the years, but Daniel and I actually several years ago started these short film productions called $99 Specials, which were really kind of like a little bit of a version 1.0 of what we've now done with the Slam Collective. And these were, short films made for $99 in 99 days. And the very simple idea was to keep the film making experience and practice going by challenging then Slam Dance filmmakers to go out and make a short that we would then, showcase at the festival the following year. And a number of those short films actually became very successful, almost turned into a TV show on NBC, and some very well-known filmmakers have been making $99 specials, like Ben Zeitlin, for example, with Origins of Electricity. And
Ryan Johnson just made Looper. He made a $99 short.
Yeah, oh, Ryan
Johnson.
A number of other really great filmmakers that have made these. And the idea was then sort of Slam Dance really is a community, and the $99 specials really embrace new technology. We wanted then to take this idea further with the Slam Collective, and just further to what Daniel's saying about the, you know, these shorts now that we have and this sort of exquisite corpse, you know, gathering here. All of the filmmakers have really, you know, embraced new technology, whether it's, you know, with a camera or sound or in post. And of course, now the crews have got even smaller. I mean, pretty much, I think every one of these short docs have been made by the filmmaker themselves, with, you know, some additional help or none at all.
Mm. Another thing that, well, it's something that Daniel was speaking to earlier, something that very much impresses me, is that all of the participants of this experimental documentary, they are all alumni of the festival, which lets me know that really there's an ongoing relationship that you guys keep up with your filmmakers. It's not like I'll see you 1 year and never hear from you again. I mean, it does have a family kind of communal feeling to it. So I would imagine that that's very important to you.
Yeah, that's really what Sundance is, you know, is all about. And of course, independent filmmaking is much stronger when it comes together in collaboration. I think as Sundance has shown in sort of this DIY approach over the years of bringing sort of these emerging filmmakers together and putting them, you know, together with Sundance, and then sort of having a, you know, real and being much stronger for that. And, you know, Daniel and I have had many conversations then about this sort of Sam Collective, this sort of global experiment. And, you know, Sundance has definitely got to the stage where it clearly can't show all of the films that would like to that are submitted to the festival. So one of the goals of actually with the SAM Collective and with Want to Be American is to demonstrate, we hope, to other independent filmmakers from around the world that, you know, you don't have to ask for permission to make your film or even get into, you know, a festival, whether it's Sundance or whatever other festival it is around the world. In actual fact, by coming together with fellow filmmakers, you can actually create something and create strength in numbers by, you know, through film production, but then also exhibition as well, because one of the components really here of I Want to Be an American is not just the showcase at the festival, but then after that to sort of take charge of exhibition and to put the project out online. And, you know, one of our hopes with this project is then to carry it on for other filmmakers like us who haven't necessarily been at Sundance, but want to, you know, showcase their work, you know, together as a community around the world.
Yeah, yeah. I actually want to ask you a question about the general personality of the festival, because if you look at the beginnings of the festival and what kind of identity you were trying to set out for it from the outset, how has that identity kind of deepened and matured over the years, do you think?
Well, actually, Daniel would be a very good person to also speak to this, because, of course, Daniel's a Grand Jury Prize winner at Sundance with a film that he made called Bible and Gun Club, which won the, you know, jury prize in the late 90s, and sort of, you know, he's seen the development of it. But I think what's really been important to Sundance is really we've remained true to our roots. You know, we were a wild bunch of filmmakers that didn't get their films into Sundance, and so we came together and found strength in that by showing our films side by side in Park City with Sundance filmmakers. Sundance, you know, really focuses on emerging filmmakers that don't have distribution for their films. You know, at Sundance, you often have not only films that have got distribution, but films that have already got a lot of marketing weight behind them for the coming year.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong in that. I mean, I think that, you know, Sundance is a truer representation of what independent filmmaking is. Again, if you put these two festivals together, I think they really do make for a grand American indie experience. And Sundance has stayed true to its roots. And, you know, you can see these. It's really like the promise of the underground, if you like, of films and filmmakers coming through that are experimenting and trying new things. And, you know, as obviously now You know, we've seen a great deal of talent that has come through Sundance, and indeed there is going to be this year.
Yeah. Well, Daniel had spoken to it about the thematic kind of thread that's running, that he's finding is running through I Want to Be an American. And I've heard from people that run various festivals that each year there tends to be a more common theme among all the films being entered. And I'm wondering, do you see a theme building from this year's crop of selections?
No, there's no theme in terms of storytelling and the types of filmmakers that we have. I mean, Sundance has grown, and it now receives well over 5,000 submissions every year. We are seeing more films coming from around the world.
Mm.
But the festival itself is programmed by filmmakers who aren't directed towards any taste or fashion. They decide themselves what the program is going to be. Each has their own vote. There's no upper programming going on. And, of course, there's no programming going on automatically with people at Sundance inviting certain films to be a part of the showcase. The entire program this year is once again made up of blind submissions, which I think is a very exciting proposition. And the programmers who are filmmakers that have been at Sundance come back and kind of give it, it's like a re-energizing, really, of Sundance, but it's also a development, of course, as we see more and more submissions. I think the only theme perhaps you could look at Sundance is really how filmmakers during the last 3 to 5 years have just embraced new technology themselves,
mm-hmm.
Either through, again, production equipment or post-production software. And being able then to spend more time on crafting, their stories, spending more time making their films, which I think has risen the quality of independent film that we're seeing at Sundance.
Well, I guess the real point of my question was, filmmakers they portray the world around them. I mean, they hold up a mirror to the world. And I just didn't know if filmmakers were, if they were troubled by the similar things that they see around them. But
yeah, I think if I could jump in there, I think there definitely is a collective consciousness amongst filmmakers around the world who have attached themselves, jumped onto new digital technologies, which are very new. I mean, we're talking maybe 3 years old, 4 years old, where camera systems came out, and you're seeing filmmakers come out of places like Q out of Kolkata, who have not only jumped on these new technologies with new distribution through online, but it's the way that the films are shot. And I think think if there's any new wave of filmmaking, which we really haven't seen in the last 10 to 20 years, certainly in American cinema, it's this new wave which comes out of new digital technology, which is literally one, two crews going and making feature films for no budget. There was no budget attached to this particular collective. I think, Peter, we had some money earmarked, but if the filmmaker spent maybe $10 making these films on cab fares, I wouldn't be surprised. There's that to it, but just I think the spirit of using technology to find and seek out smaller cultures, some things that they find within their culture interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That is what I found with these films that we produced. I mean, my film is about a very, very small little culture within a culture in Cape Coloured Malay community here in Cape Town. And if I look at the other films as well, Q's film is about it, a transsexual prostitute in, on the streets of Calcutta. And so that's just, you know, it's very personal filmmaking, but it's the filmmakers themselves finding unique little lives that exist within their own little universes.
Yeah. And Peter, you have a segment in the movie as well, correct?
Yes, I have a segment called All About Eve, and it actually happens to be about my daughter, a 12-year-old who is, you know, working herself out as someone in this new century, and it's a study. It's a very simple, straightforward study on her, and of course. It kind of speaks to the point that Daniel was making earlier on, that it's interesting that we're, you know, with the project obviously sort of was inspired by the exquisite corpse game, and also then the surrealists. And of course, mm-hmm. here is someone, a 12-year-old who, you know, is not conforming right now to society. She's sort of very much a free thinker and a free spirit. With her own, you know, ideas, and it's, you know, in and unto itself, she's quite, you know, dreamlike in how she works things out. And of course, the surrealists were like that as well. And sort of, you know, I think this has a lot to do with the I Want to Be an American, you know, project, because we are trying to, you know, experiment and, you know, push the bounds here with new technology and our ideas of really what a documentary film, you know, can be, whether it's an anthology like this, but also with sort of, you know, ideas and thoughts from filmmakers and the subjects. And I think that it is interesting, as Daniel was saying, also how, you know, our stories, you know, are connected, how in many ways we all want, you know, similar things in life.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting the take that the filmmakers have on this, because it has been it's very much an experimental documentary project.
Well, I wish you guys the very best of luck. What we're doing is we're interviewing various Slam Dance filmmakers, and we're airing one interview every night leading up to the festival. So we've done that for many years, and we're happy to do it. I love your festival. So thank you both so much.
Can I just put a few plugs into where people can watch the trailer and the films?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, so the trailer is online at the moment on both YouTube and Vimeo. It's you can just do a search on YouTube called I Want to Be an American Trailer. And it will be online when we screen it in Park City on the 21st at 6 p.m. It'll go live on our website, which is slamcollective.com. As
okay.
well as iwanttobeanamericanmovie.com. So you'll be able to watch the entire film or selections. You can watch one short, or you can watch them from 1 to 7 as they're being screened in Park City, and it'll remain online.
Now, we hear from Dan Mirvish. In addition to having a film at this year's festival titled Between Us, Mr. Mirvish is also a co-founder of the festival. So I need to ask you before I let you go about Slam Dance.
Oh, sure,
Slam
yeah.
Dance, obviously. You're a co-founder of the festival.
Yes.
So tell me how that came to be, your role in that.
Well, we, it goes back to Omaha the movie with Dana Altman, and we said we didn't get into Sundance, basically. That was it. It was back in 1995. And at the time, you know, Sundance was only a few years old themselves, but had all this great success. And 95 was an interesting turning point in kind of a lot of independent film. That was the year that Miramax sold to Disney and Fine Line became part of Warner Brothers and Fox launched Fox Searchlight. And it was really kind of the Hollywoodization of independent film. And Sundance was part of that, sort of the leader of that movement, to their credit. But anyway, so what happened was in 95, they took a lot of second-time directors and alumni directors, films with big names and big budgets, and they kind of forgot about the first-time directors and we were kind of like the next generation, you know, having been influenced by Soderbergh and Linkletter and Robert Rodriguez and those guys. And so they sort of shut us out.
So we got together with a bunch of other filmmakers that we knew, and we said, well, you know, we'd heard of a couple of individual filmmakers the year before, including Trey Parker and Matt Stone, who had done their own little renegade screening with their film, Cannibal the Musical. And we kind of heard about those guys, and we said, well, all right, if a couple of individual filmmakers can do that and get a little bit of attention, why not combine resources? And so that first year we had a dozen features and a dozen shorts, and we all got together. And, and honestly, there were people that were very nervous, filmmakers that dropped out because, you know, there was a worry that we were going to get backlisted. The Sundance would never invite us back. And so Dana called up Robert Altman and said, you know, Bob, what do you think? Is this a risk worth taking? Should we do this? Are we going to piss people off? And he thought about it for a minute, and he said, fuck them. And with that blessing, you know, from the Pope, basically, we said, all right, we're in. You know, we're doing it. Yeah. And, of course, you know, I find out 19 years later, you know, we're still blacklisted.
But it has to be, exactly. But Slam Dance still has the spirit of this kind of renegade spirit. And it's got to be gratifying that so many independent filmmakers have embraced Slam Dance over the years.
Oh, yeah, no, it's great. I mean, I was just, you know, with Between Us, we've had a great festival run this fall. We had this whirlwind tour of 7 countries and 14 festivals. And one of the festivals, I was in Athens, and the only other American there, because, you know, it's a pretty dubious time to be in Greece right now, but the only other American was with Stillman. And I met with a few times over the years, but, you know, we hadn't really spent that much time together. So, we're at the Parthenon or looking at the Parthenon. And this is a guy who's been to Sundance with all of his films. He's been on the Sundance jury. And he's the biggest fan of Slam Dance. You know, he's never been to Slam Dance, but he's just the spirit of it, and he knows some of us. And when you tell that then to, like, you know, we just had a reception at the DGA for our new filmmaker. And when you tell them that, you know, Slam Dance has been embraced by people, you know, by, like, these icons of indie film, from Robert Altman to Steven Soderbergh to Whit Stillman to Richard Linklater, like, that gives us the strength that we need. You know, screw Hollywood and screw the gatekeepers at Sundance and Tribeca and South By, who are these professional, you know, film programmers. And it's like, no, it's like we take our strength from other directors and other filmmakers.
Yeah.
They say it's a good thing, it's a good thing. And, you know, and we support each other. And that's our motto, is by filmmakers for filmmakers, or as I like to say, by unemployed filmmakers for unemployed filmmakers. And and that's what makes Slam Dance different and unique from any other festival in the world. And I believe it happened to a lot of festivals, and there's a lot of great festivals out there. And honestly, Sundance is a great festival. You know, hey, if you can get in, more power to you. And they've gotten, if anything, better, you know, over the years. But what's different about it is that, you know, at Sundance you have a staff, you have programmers, you have you have 2,800 volunteers. At Slam Dance, all of our programming is done by other filmmakers. It's done by alumni filmmakers. It is a community. It's more than a film festival, but slightly less than a movement, you know. And, you know, a lot of people would argue it's a bowel movement. But anyway, but the point is that it's, you know, there is a lot of collaboration among our filmmakers. I mean, you know, I don't know when this is airing, but, you told me when it's airing. But, you know, Ben Zeitlin, Beast of the Southern Wild, you know, nominated, obviously, wonderful achievement with the Oscars and with Beast of the Southern Wild. You know, his first film was at Slam Dance. And then we gave him $99, and he shot a film for Slam Dance, which is amazing, which is on our website. You know, so, and then, you know, he goes off and makes Beast of the Southern Wild, and God bless him, you know. So so we have that community. Someone like Ryan Johnson, you know, who this year scored, you know, he may have gotten an Oscar snub, but he got a DGA nomination for directing an episode of Breaking Bad and WGA nomination for writing Looper. Well, we showed Ryan's first short at Slam Dance, and he was a programmer for a year or two after that, you know. Chris Nolan, you know, we showed his first film, but more importantly, not just that we showed his first film, but then his wife, Emma, who's his producing partner, she was a programmer for 2 more years after that. Yeah, so it's not just that we show these people's films. It's that there's an intrinsic connection. You know, when I was getting ready to make Between Us, in both casting and crew, you know, one of the first people I called was Lynn Shelton, you know, because she had a film, her first film, played at Slam Dance. She's had a couple, you know, and she is, you know, her subsequent films have played at Sundance, and she's doing great. But, you know, she's one of the first people I call for advice because, you know, this is how we do it. This, you know, it's this great little secret society. I don't want to say this too loud, but it's this secret society that we have. We have these little secret handshakes, you know, as it were. There's not an actor in this town who I can look at. I can't look, you know, I look up their IMDb page, and there's some Slam Dance filmmaker that they've worked with somewhere.
Yeah.
And I can always
yeah.
call and say, okay, how is this person to work with? Are they good? Are they an asshole? Same with distributors. Same with agent. Like, okay, you know, I can always call someone and say, okay, you know, how is this person? Or I can collaborate with someone. So,
I've noticed that too. I've noticed that as opposed to other festivals that can be kind of impersonal. There's an ongoing personal connection that Slam Dance holds on to with its filmmakers. I mean, it's evident in the alumni that are now programming the festival, or you
yeah.
know, what have you? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. No, it's I mean, it's a community, and in the truest sense. I mean, you know, spouses and producers and agents will come and go over your career, but your connection and your friendship with other filmmakers, other directors especially, that lasts forever. You know?
And tell me about the audience. Tell me about the audience real quick, because as you said, you've screened your movie at other festivals.
We just won the Grand Jury Prize at the Bahamas Film Festival. So that was
What makes a Slam Dance audience unique for you?
Well, it's arguably one of the worst screening venues you're going to see. It's a small, cramped conference room that, you know, at the top, you're at 9,000 feet elevation, so there's very little oxygen. It's always hot. No matter how many times we've tried air conditioning, it never quite works. And, you know, and this, you know, if there's subtitles in your movie, forget it. There's no good line of sight for the audience to see it. But the sound is good and the projection is good most of the time, and that's what counts. But it's intimate in the truest sense. I mean, I think it seats 120 people, but, you know, more often than not, we squeeze at least 10 or 20 more in, and people are sitting on the floor, people are sitting in the aisles, people are sitting in people's laps. When I introduce a film, I always say, you know, look, it's going to get hot in here. It's a clothing optional film festival. You know, people take off their coats. They take off more sometimes. And we always have, but what's great about it is there's this great connection then between the audience and the filmmakers. And we've had some amazingly memorable Q&As over the years, you know, from Vince Vaughn kicking the seat of the woman in front of him at a screening to, you know, to Leanne Rimes singing an a cappella version of not Ave Maria, but something like, you know, of Amazing Grace, you know, at a screening and sitting back in her chair, you know, after three fire alarms during the screening, you know, so it's just bizarre. But the audience is made up, it's made up of other Slam Dance filmmakers, Sundance filmmakers, you know, the same audience that goes to Sundance, you know, they're just coming, it's, you know, we're a snowball throw across the street from the Egyptian. You know, investors, local Park City people, local Utah people, you know, film critics. So it's a fun mixed bag, you know, and it's a great alternative to Sundance. I mean, you go to a Sundance movie and then you go see a Slam Dance movie, and it's a different experience. In 18 years of going to Park City, I've yet to figure out how to buy a ticket to a Sundance movie. It is a complete and utter mystery to me. How would you buy those tickets? There's some lottery and a line and a website and a this. And I'm like, it is mystical to me. And I've been to a few screenings, but it's only because I happen to know the director and they slip me a ticket and I get in line, or I know one of the lecturers. So it is an utter mystery. Slam it, it's very simple. You go up and you pay money and you get in line and you see the
movie.
It's not that complicated.
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
I've always appreciated the personality of slam dance.
Yeah, well, part of it is because we're, you know, usually fairly inept about advanced ticket sales and computers and things like that. So we sort of default to the simple. But, you know, I think it's good for the audience, too. If you show up and there's room, we let you in. If you show up and there's not room, we still let you in. You're just sitting on the floor. You know, that's the difference.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was actually going to ask because I think it was your Twitter page that I just saw you posted something about the Sarasota Film Festival, and I didn't know if you're planning to attend that this year or if you have in the past.
Well, I have never, but I've heard it's great, and I actually just got a nice message from an email from Tom Hall asking me to submit myself. So, but he hasn't seen it yet. So, that was why I thought I should retweet it.
Well, if you do, that's actually in my neck of the woods. So I'd love to know so
yeah.
I can go up and meet you and see your film.
Yeah. Oh, no. Well, thanks. And you know, and then I've also submitted to the Florida Film Festival in Orlando. About that one. I was just going to say, like, the other thing about slam dance is my role in the operation these days. I'm not involved day-to-day on a year-round basis, but in Park City, I host the sledding competition, our annual sled-off, and then I also host the Hot Tub Summit, which is the wettest panel discussion in Park City. So
yes, I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, so I hope all of your listeners can join in, literally or virtually. So.
And that's great, too, because I don't remember who I was speaking to yesterday. I think I might have been speaking to Slam Dance TV staff, and they're telling me about the hot tub meetings. And I was like, you know, something like Sundance, it's so filled with anxiety, but Slam Dance seems like such a much more relaxed atmosphere. You guys have hot tub meetings and that kind of stuff. It's great.
It is, because what happens is filmmakers who get into Sundance, they're very stressed out. You know, and they have every right to be, you know, because, you know, maybe 5% of them will get a big distribution deal or 1% will or something like that. And everyone else, if they don't get a deal, they just feel like crap at the end of the week. And Slam Dance, we go in and we say, like, you guys are all going to feel like crap. So have a good time. You know, you may get it. Maybe one of you will get a deal. Maybe none of you will get a deal. I mean, we've had years where, you know, paranormal, it gets picked up. But other years where, nothing much happens. So don't make it about that. Change your expectations. The expectation isn't to get a deal. The expectation is, am I going to make friends that will be lasting friends over your lifetime? You know, am I going to meet collaborators? I mean, Christopher Nolan met Wally Pfister, his DP, at Slam Dance. You know, that's a friendship that's worked out pretty well for both of them, I'd say. You know, so.
Yeah.
The Russo brothers met Steven Soderbergh and, you know, took him. Now they're directing Captain America too, you know. So it's those relationships that are much stronger. And then, of course, just experiencing, you know, the film with an audience and in a really hot room, you know. So,
yeah.
You don't get that anywhere. So I think I'm going to be, by the way, just a little plug, I think I'm going to be giving out free milkshakes at our screen. So.
Oh, wow. Well, that's the incentive that they need.
Yeah.
Right.